Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I spent a little time on huntrealestate.com this week, and it is an interesting place. There's lots of things that you can do relative to real estate, and certainly you can find out a lot about what's available here in Western New York and all across upstate, and through our links even to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and ask about our many exclusive programs while you've got them on the phone there, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And I just want everybody to understand how low the interest rates are today. They are near historic lows, if they're within a quarter point or something of the historic lows ever. And it's an opportunity for you to enter a market through the pre-purchase commitment program with cash. In today's marketplace, where there's a shortage of inventory, you're going to be competing with other buyers in many cases, and if that's the case, you want to make sure that your offer is as strong as possible. Our real estate professionals tell me regularly that without that pre-purchase commitment or without cash, that they're at a complete disadvantage when they take their customers in to see a home. So put yourself in the advantage and call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And check out that low rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. But the local number here is 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically. And just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. Sometimes you'll drive by a sign, and there'll be riders and pictures and 14 phone numbers and websites and QR codes, and it's just confusing. Just remember that number, 633-9400. And that'll get you everything you need. I'm sorry, 631-4800. 639-400 is our office number. 631-4800, all the information you'll ever need. We're in a very busy market right now. We have a shortage of inventory. If you've ever thought about selling your home, I could never think of a better time than right now for you to realize the most you're ever going to realize, certainly up to this point in time in history. And I encourage you to test the market if you're at all interested. It's never been better than it is right now. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, Rochester Americans, and we also support the Buffalo Bisons. And we're happy to have with us today, live, remote, the GM of the Bisons and the president of the team. That's Mike Bushkowski. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing, I guess, as well as I can be with not having baseball this year so far.
Yeah, you know, you've got quite a storied sports history of your own. You were a great baseball player in your youth, a hockey player, captain of the Canisius hockey team. You've had quite a history of sports in your life, and this must be killing you at this time of year.
Yeah, you know, it's obvious, you know, no one has ever experienced this. There's in Major League Baseball, you know, there's been lockouts, there's been strikes, there's been work stoppages, but never have gone this long from the start of the season to, you know, now into the end of June, July with no baseball. And it's just, there's so many times where, you know, you're thinking, I know there's not going to be a game, but I wake up and I'm thinking, geez, if there was a game tonight, it'd be a Friday night game, and, you know, who would we be playing? And I have to figure out a way to turn the alerts off on my phone, because I still get them from my calendar saying that tonight.
Well, that must be torture.
Yeah, constant reminder. I got to turn those off.
Let's tell our listeners, you know, everybody knows the Buffalo Bisons, but And certainly over 130-year history of that franchise is really remarkable. But tell us a little bit about the team itself and how it's evolved. You've been there, 37 years with Bison Baseball? And I'd just like you to share with us a little bit about the history of the team. John Dandy has been on the show several times, and he's a great fan and obviously a great proponent of sports in our town, having been leading that team for as long as he has. But bring us up to date. Tell us how we got where we are, and let's stop the pandemic talk for a second. We'll come back to that in a minute, but talk about the team for a second.
Yeah, you're right. Over 130 years of professional baseball in Buffalo, 1877, actually the first professional team. And a lot of people don't realize that the Bisons, Buffalo, actually played in the National League for about 8 or 9 years in the late 1800s.
Wow.
And was at one point looked like they were going to join the brand new American League in 1901, and a deal fell through, and actually Boston was awarded the franchise that Buffalo thought they were going to get. So we played in the minor leagues primarily at AAA for many, many years, and primarily in the league we're in now, the International League. Buffalo actually lost its team in 1970, the AAA team. They had moved from Offerman Stadium, which many people in Buffalo loved, Offerman Stadium, and they moved into War Memorial Stadium to share that facility with the Buffalo Bills at the time, and things weren't going so well. There was a lot of racial unrest at that time around, especially War Memorial Stadium. The Bisons actually, for a few years, played their night games in Niagara Falls at Hyde Park or Sal Magley Stadium. Only played day games in Buffalo because of the trouble that was going on, and eventually it led to the point where the Bisons actually forfeited the franchise right in the middle of the 1970 season, moved to Winnipeg in Canada. So we were without a team for 71 through 78, and that's when Mayor Griffin then put together a group to bring baseball back. It was Double A back then at War Memorial Stadium, 1979, and team started to fail again in the early 80s, and that's when the Rich family stepped in and purchased the team, eventually purchased one of the AAA teams, upgraded the Bisons back to AAA. We finished at War Memorial Stadium the last year in 1987. It's hard to believe it's been that many years. Opened then Pilot Field in 1988, and it had a terrific run downtown at now what is Salem Field.
Over the course of the years since you've been in the new stadium, we call it new, you've received several awards for attendance and also for you personally received several awards for outstanding management of the team. How do you? I understand that there were actually several years when the Bisons drew more people than many of the pro teams.
Yeah, when we opened then Pilot Field 1988, we drew over 1 million fans for 6 straight years, and that was a time in Major League Baseball where several franchises really struggled. The new stadium wave had not yet hit Major League Baseball. Cleveland struggled, the Chicago White Sox struggled, and yes, there were. Yeah, I think in each of those years we outdrew at least one or two major league teams at the time. And I think, you know, obviously your expertise in real estate, Peter, I think the ballpark in Buffalo, when it opened, it was really the first brand new major ballpark, you know, minor league park, but major in size, to be built right in back in the downtown area of the city. You know, at that time, a lot of the ballparks around the country were built, out in the suburbs. They were cookie cutter, multi-purpose football, baseball. A lot of them were artificial turf, you know, and what we brought back was baseball only, natural grass. You know, it just felt like an old time ballpark, yet it was brand new. And the success that we had in Buffalo with attendance, you know, drew interest from everybody. We had every major league team that was looking at a new ballpark visited at one point. Eventually, it started a boom, not only in the major leagues, but in the minor leagues, and to the point where 30 years later, we are now the oldest ballpark in our league. And that stadium boom really helped attendance in minor league baseball, major league baseball. It's really raised the baseball experience across the country for fans.
If there's a season, which we hope there will be, and then if we return to baseball as we knew it, do you have plans for the stadium itself? Obviously, it's an anchor in downtown, and with everything going on around it now, with the redevelopment of the former HSBC Tower and the activity of M&T and other organizations, and in that part of town itself, do you have plans for the stadium itself?
We do. You know, we're always looking at it, but you're right, especially in the last handful of years where we actually have neighbors now, to the ballpark. There
were
many years where if there was no Bisons game and no Sabres game going on, there wasn't a whole lot of activity downtown. And now we have people that are literally living, right across Washington Street and going to be living in the tower and Canal Side. And so we're looking at how do we not only update the ballpark, because it is 30 years old and it does need to be updated, but how do we connect it now and make it part of not only baseball like it is, but part of our surrounding community and all that's happening downtown. So, we've looked at everything from, new business opportunities to connect it. We've looked at possibly even people living at some point, maybe above the ballpark. And our plans, unfortunately, since March, have really been put on hold. But we had made some headway and talking to our government leaders on the state level and the local level about what the ballpark needs to be able to stay the great place it's been for the next 30 years.
You know, it's interesting. I last week I had Renee Jones from M&T Bank on as my guest, and we talked about a great deal about the tech hub and the development of the Seneca One Tower and what that means. And I took a tour of the building this week on Monday with Michelle Trolley, one of the executive VPs of the bank, who's in charge of that project. It's pretty amazing. But a lot of those apartments that Mr. Jamal is building will look right at the stadium, which would be a tremendous asset, I would think. And that, of course, there's office buildings around there that also have a view of the stadium. So with or without any redevelopment, it is a hub already of activity, real estate activity. But it's very interesting that you mentioned building some residential component. So everything is on hold right now, Mike, and pending what happens with baseball itself?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things going on. Obviously, the pandemic and having New York State and everyone really dealing with that, but also baseball itself. You're right. There's this is kind of a little bit separate from the pandemic and baseball trying to start. The actual agreement between the major leagues and the minor leagues, it's an overall agreement that talks about how many minor league teams there will be across the country. That is set to expire at the end of September this year, and we have been negotiating a new agreement, but again, that has been put on hold, and so we're not quite sure what the parameters are going to be. Probably won't be much in effect on AAA baseball, but on the lower levels of baseball in the smaller towns, the Class A teams could really be affected. Major League Baseball even wants to eliminate some of those teams, and so we're trying to work through that. But we do know that part of the agreement will include new facility standards. Right now, we operate and agree with Major League Baseball to maintain certain minimums in each of our ballparks, and whether that is the foot candle power for lighting, and there's field requirements and clubhouse size requirements for players, and even down to the number of bathrooms you have per section or per seating area in the ballpark. And that has not been updated really since 1991, I believe, was the last time it was updated. So those will be updated, and we're kind of waiting to see what might come from the facility standards, because that would be the first thing we would need to do, regardless of any other plans you have. You obviously have to meet the standards. And so until those are defined, it's kind of hard to go further than that.
Well, this is a complex problem for you yourself, Mike, because of the fact that not only are you overseeing the Bison operations, but you're also overseeing the Northwest Arkansas Naturals, AA team, the West Virginia Black Bears as well. So how are you traveling? Obviously, today, this year is different, but in the past, were you traveling between these cities regularly to oversee those operations? And tell me how they all dovetail.
Yeah, pretty much. We do share, you know, a lot of resources come out of Buffalo because it's the oldest franchise. You know, we're owned by Rich Products, so we naturally work in tandem with them. So our legal services are out of Buffalo, our accounting services, our human resources, all of that comes out of Buffalo for all three teams. But yeah, each of those two other places have staffs that that I work with. They each have a general manager that I work closest with. The team in Springdale, Arkansas is Class AA. As you mentioned, we're an affiliate of the Kansas City Royals there. And the team in Morgantown, West Virginia, the West Virginia Black Bears, is the single A affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. So you're managing three different relationships, the Blue Jays in Buffalo and the Royals in Springdale and the Pirates in Morgantown, and doing a lot of the same things that we do in Buffalo, just to a little bit smaller scale. You know, the ballpark in Springdale is not as big as the one in Buffalo. The ballpark in Morgantown only seats about 2,500 because that's a short season team. They don't even start until the middle of June. But yeah, I just try to help coordinate and keep everything moving in those two places. And we're responsible for the stadium, the management of all three of the stadiums that we operate in, and that keeps us pretty busy. So while we're always thinking about plans in Buffalo, obviously, and that people hear about, we're looking at those same types of issues and Springdale, Arkansas, which is right near Bentonville, where Walmart headquarters is, and right near where the University of Arkansas is, and they're experiencing similar to Buffalo. It was a very rural area that suddenly were being connected with condos and some businesses and a brand new children's hospital right outside that ballpark. So we do spend a lot of time figuring out how our ballparks will, as I said, not only be great for baseball, but how do we connect with our neighbors.
You know, that kind of begs the question of where professional sports teams fit in with the planning of any metropolitan area. And obviously there's a great deal of talk, or there was until the middle of March anyway, a great deal of talk about the future of the Buffalo Bills and their stadium. And is the future of the Bison Stadium itself in any way connected with what the Bills may do?
You know, I don't think really it is. And, you know, obviously the rumor of maybe all stadium town versus where it is now in Orchard Park, but I think our location has proven to be, you know, perfect. It's easy to get to from Canada, and as I, you know, we're a Blue Jays affiliate. We get close to of the people who purchase individual game tickets for the Bisons, close to 25% come from Canada. And
really?
So it's pretty easy in normal times to get over the bridge and come to our ballpark. I think we're very easy to get to. You can see it obviously from the 190. So the location I think is great. It's just a matter of what can we do to make sure that ballpark remains a great place for many years to come. A lot of ballparks, when you start to reach 30 years old, that's when people start to think about new ballparks. But I think we've worked very closely with the city of Buffalo over the years, the county of Erie, to be able to keep proper funding, both public and private, coming to the ballpark so that we can maintain it. And I think everybody's done a great job. And so, therefore, there is not really a need to talk about a new ballpark for us. It's just more of how can we enhance it.
So who actually owns the stadium, Mike?
The city of Buffalo owns it, so we lease from the city. When it was built in 1988, the city was responsible for the day-to-day operation of the ballpark for a number of years, and we paid a percentage of our revenue. But really, it was all operated by the city, including the grounds crew and the engineering and the maintenance and the repairs. And there came a point where it really wasn't making financial sense for the city. They were actually spending close to $1 million more than our lease payment was. And so we entered a new agreement 15 years ago now that we took away all of the operation from the city. So they really have no cost to operate it. We assume all of the costs. And And we work with them just on really on capital projects, whether it's cement repair, or roof repair, or painting in the ballpark. Many projects over the years. The most recent, which we would have unveiled on opening day, was the extension of the netting, the around the ballpark. If you're last year, Major League Baseball, minor league baseball, it was kind of a big issue of fans that were unfortunately being struck by baseballs, and so we've extended the netting all the way down from home plate all the way down to each foul pole, and it's installed, Peter, and ready to go. Just no baseball game to be played.
So we've only got a couple of minutes before we have to go to a break, and so I don't want to get too deep into another topic here. But to the stadium itself, when will you, I guess, a lot of things have been put on pause, including the Forum and T-Bank, the development of the building. But they began again just in the last couple of weeks. Do you see that from a real estate standpoint, the improvements to the building itself, that you will at some point in time kind of pick up where you left off and kind of cross your fingers that there will actually be people in the stands?
I think so. And that's, that's our, the big question going forward for us is, when will things return to close to what they used to be? Will they ever be where they are? I think we recognize that we're going to need to make some of our own investments, perhaps, moving to cashless systems, and maybe there's even less capacity in our ballpark. And it's something that we're going to learn from if other sports get started, how they're doing it. And right now we have a lot of plans. We just unfortunately have more questions still than we have answers.
Well, you have a multi-layered set of issues. You've got contracts with players. You've got obviously the CDC and the state and national governments and their regulations and stipulations. So it's an extremely complex problem. And I'd like you to address some of those things when we come back from the break. And we'll be back with more with Mike Butchkowski from the Rich Baseball Operations, the president of the operations, after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new or continuously updated HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and through our links to Boston, Massachusetts, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. And you also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our exclusive program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment, even our warm home loan. And don't forget about the second look program. In many cases, you might have heard another solicitation for mortgages on television or on the radio or someplace else, even on your phone. And you may have gone through the process and been pre-qualified or pre-approved or some form of a statement from a bank saying that you could afford X number of dollars. Make sure you have the lowest rate and closing costs in the market. There's only one way to do that. That's by calling Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 and ask them to take a second look. The worst that could happen is we'll give you a gift certificate. So that's the very worst that can happen. The very best that could happen is you find out maybe there's a better deal. And if there is, we'll help you find it. 633-3700, only available through Hunt Mortgage. If you just want to pick up the phone and ask any question about anything relative to real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one of its kind in North America, 633-9400, and one of our customer service reps will either answer your question right there or direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan. There's no greater point of security in the real estate market than that. available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. I'm live remote today with Mike Bushkowski, who is the president of the Bison operations here in Buffalo, and also heads two other teams, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals and the West Virginia Black Bears. Excuse me. And we've been talking about really the present and hopefully future of baseball here in Buffalo, not only from a sports standpoint, but from a real estate standpoint as well. Excuse me for just a second there. You know, Mike, just as recently as March 9th, there was a press release about some changes you were making in the front office there. You've been president of the team since 2019, and prior to that had several roles over the last 33 years, all of which leading to the leadership of the whole operation. It's odd that just on March 9th, these announcements were made, and then within a few days, everything was different. At that time, did you sense that there might not be a baseball season?
No, we really didn't, Peter. I was actually in Florida, Dunedin, Florida, where the Blue Jays and the Bisons train, and that I had arrived the day before. That night, the story hit, if you remember, about the NBA basketball game that was suddenly stopped because of a player testing positive. And I was there. I was supposed to go to the facility the next day like I normally would, and got a call from the Blue Jays people saying, hey, we think we're going to close the facility. We're going to shut it off to anybody coming in, so we'll have to meet somewhere else. And stayed for a couple of days, and camps eventually got shut down, and I returned to Buffalo, and immediately we started dealing with what has happened since. But no, we really didn't have an indication that it would turn out to be as widespread as it is, and the total effect that it would have. And I even think most people, I think at the time, thought, well, maybe it's March, maybe we'll just start the season a little bit late. Hopefully we'd get through the virus, and of course that didn't happen, and the days have turned into weeks and now turned into months, and still no baseball.
So how do you communicate, Mike, with obviously with the governments and the other team owners and the representatives of the players? How do you stay in touch, and is there kind of a universal source of information? I've tried to figure this out in various industries, including our own, trying to figure out how we can develop a kind of a consensus of thought. Is there a means by which you communicate regularly, all parties involved?
There are. Usually it's done each league you're in. You know, and I guess that's where it would start, is your member teams in your league, regular meetings all the time, even in the normal times, about best business practices and ideas and what people are doing. You know, it's interesting in minor league baseball, while we compete obviously on the field with 13 other teams, including Rochester right down the road, Syracuse, we're really not in competition for ideas. And there's always been in baseball tremendous sharing of ideas and, you know, things that other teams have tried that have worked, and you learn from them. Everybody's willing to give you the details of what they did and how you might adapt it to your ballpark. Baseball has had, not only at the league meetings, but we annually meet what are called the baseball winter meetings, where all of minor league baseball gathers. There's a promotional seminar that all of minor league baseball sends representatives to. So there's a constant sharing of ideas, and whether it's sales and marketing or operations or, you know, what the newest, greatest video board might be that's out there. And so, yeah, I think there's been regular and ongoing communication. Now it's made it a little tougher because we can't, you know, travel and meet together, but we're doing what we can on Zoom and on Microsoft Teams and staying in touch, with our fellow teams. And then now it's all about learning what are they going to be doing perhaps in their ballparks without baseball for summer. So if we think ahead that we can't play, what are some of the things we might be able to do when it's safe to gather at some point? So a lot of those discussions have turned to those topics.
Are you required, like most businesses, we were required to submit a plan, and that plan had to have certain, I guess, essentials in that plan to make it something that would be approved by the regulatory bodies within our industry and also at the state level. Is there such a dialogue going on among the owners of the stadiums that they're putting together how many people could sit there? It's kind of a mystery. I try to follow it on in the news, and it's hard to find out. Is there a standard that's going to be set, do you think, along the way here?
I think so, and I think it's, you know, what we've at least tried to learn from is as Western New York enters a new phase, you know, what are the new guidelines, whether it's what can we learn from a restaurant opening that if we were to open that we would employ, because, you know, a lot of what we do is food and beverage as well, not football. And a long time ago when this kind of got underway, we actually went and measured our stadium and said, okay, if there's a person sitting right behind home plate, first row, you know, first seat, where is the next closest seat that somebody can sit while remaining at least 6 feet apart? And we have a big ballpark. We are the largest seating capacity ballpark in AAA baseball, over 16,000 seats. And when we did the measurements, our capacity, total capacity for the ballpark doing it safely was about 2,400 people.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that kind of complicates the business part of things, too, because even if we were able to open and our maximum is 2,400 people, you know, that makes it hard business-wise for us, challenge-wise for us. We scale everything, to especially in the summer months, to be drawn 10, 12, 14,000 people for our weekend events. And so a lot of what we do to put together promotions are based on getting that many people there. If we can only get 2,400 people maximum there, then, you know, that's going to pose additional challenges for us. But, you know, we're just kind of watching those guidelines and seeing what happens in the next phase, and maybe that capacity could maybe be increased. And if there is no season, you know, then what can we do safely at the ballpark, you know, this summer?
That's so interesting, because I'm sure you, like everyone who runs a business today, is trying their best to follow the science and understand the medical side of this, all of us being obviously not professionals in that area. As you see it going forward, I mean, if this, a lot of people are saying, unless there's a vaccine and adequate treatments, we're never going to be able to go back to anything like what we used to have before. I find that almost difficult to conceive, that we would stay the way we are, because there would be so much real destruction of so many aspects of our culture, really, through that process. As you look at the science, Mike, and I know you must, is there light at the end of the tunnel there someplace where 2,400 becomes 10,000 and 10,000 then obviously hopefully would get back to 16,000?
Yeah, you know, I think there is obviously the vaccine would be the best way, in my opinion, what I have followed. But, you know, I also think, you know, as we learn how to live in this new world, you know, and I just think about what we've already investigated, Peter, in terms of even if we were to have 2,000 people in our ballpark, what would we need to do to clean that different than what we used to do to clean? You know, we used to obviously pick up all the garbage and pretty much power wash the ballpark, and now we're going to be in a disinfecting mode. And so, you know, maybe what I'm thinking is that these new standards, you know, maybe they ought to be the standard regardless if there's a vaccine or not. Maybe we just need to do a better job overall in our world of disinfecting and cleaning, and maybe that'll help the regular flu. You know, maybe we won't see as many cases there. So, yeah, we got to keep following the science. I obviously don't fully understand it. There's a lot more smarter people than me that are going to figure it out. But I'm thinking we need to learn how to live safely with this, and whether that's masks, cleaning, or maybe it's even reducing capacities, hopefully not from 16,000 to 2,400. But, you know, maybe there needs to be a few other safeguards put into place that will allow us to continue to have a viable business.
We have a couple callers on the line that we'll take after the break, so please stay with us. And if you'd like to call us here in the studio, it's 803-0930. You can always text us also at 803-0930. If you'd like to pose a question to Mike Butchkowski, the president of Rich Baseball Operations, and we'll be right back with more from our house jurors after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the always improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment, the low rate and closing cost guarantee, and the second look program. Call them today, 633-3700. I'm live remote today with Mike Butchkowski, who is the president of Rich Baseball Operations and the Buffalo Bison's general manager, a very, very important part of the fabric of our community, Mike, and we've got a bunch of callers that have been waiting patiently, so if you don't mind, we'll take a couple calls. First one is from Gary in Boston. Gary, how can we help you?
Hey, good morning. I love going down to the Bison Stadium, at least 3, 4, or 5 times a year, and I'd like to make a suggestion. I think we need some more outside advertising, especially maybe on the back of our scoreboard. When you drive by in the 190, it would be nice to know what's coming up, and maybe some of them other newer billboards along the 33 where they, electronic, where you can,
Right.
Just, there, I think that would improve the attendance.
During a normal season, we do purchase the digital billboards along the 33, the 190, the 90. The back of our scoreboard is interesting, Gary. There was a time, I don't know, a long time ago, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, we actually had our own digital board, and it kind of got shut down by the state thruway authority and put in some new guidelines. And again, this was pre what we have now, but the board couldn't move. It had to stay static. They felt it was a little too close to the off ramp, when you're getting off at Elm and Oak there. And then the technology got old and we replaced it. And now that's part of what our partners at Salins have. They have the back of the scoreboard for them as part of the naming rights deal that we just negotiated.
Interesting. We have another caller here, Mike, from this is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Mike. I go back to the 1960s when the Lancaster Dome was going to be built, and we were in line to get that franchise that Montreal ended up getting, but that they had a corruption scandal, and that was done. But back in the early 90s, also, we were in line, I believe, for a National League franchise. I was wondering if you could give us some detail on why that failed.
Yeah, we were. You're right. Buffalo, actually, one of the things, without having baseball games at night, it gives you a chance to catch up on some reading, and I've always been a history person, and I've done a lot more reading about the history of the Bisons. The Bisons, as I mentioned, 1901, were promised really an American League franchise, and the president backed out on the deal and gave it to Boston. Buffalo was a candidate again in the 60s when the Mets got their team, the possibility. And then, you're right, in the I guess it started in about the mid-80s and concluded when Denver and Miami were awarded the National League expansion franchises. We were on the short list. Our ballpark was built to be expanded for Major League Baseball one day, and I think a lot changed. If you go back and look at what changed in baseball from the mid-80s until the 90s, and really the biggest thing was the economics of the game. The player salaries really exploded. I mean, in the 80s, it was unusual for somebody to be making $1 million a year. That was a lot back then for baseball. And it exploded, more and more players making millions, now tens of millions. And I think it became difficult for cities the size of Buffalo to be able to support a major league franchise. Because in baseball, remember, there's no salary cap. Football has a cap. Hockey has a cap. Baseball, there's no cap. So you're competing against, the New York Yankees and the Chicago teams and the LA teams that just have such a bigger market and are able to bring in so much more revenue from their TV and their radio and their advertising. And I think it became hard for cities like Buffalo to have a major league team. You know, there's cities that are twice as big as Buffalo that are considered small market teams now in Major League Baseball. So I'm not saying we wouldn't have had the fan support. I think people would have supported. They would have come. But whether we would have been able to generate the amount of revenue that's really needed to compete for the players, right, to be able to get some star players and keep them. And if you can't do that, it's becomes quite a struggle. So, yeah, I still wish we would have got one, but I think with the way the economics changed in the game, it became clear that they needed bigger TV and bigger markets more so than they needed great baseball towns.
You know, it's so interesting that we're talking about this at this time of year, Mike, and there's that void in our lives where we can't be outside sitting at a baseball stadium and watching a great game and just having some fun with our family and friends. And, you know, it reminds me that today is American Eagle Day. I don't know if anybody knows that, and yesterday was obviously Juneteenth, which I don't think many people in this country knew why that was an important day until obviously all the issues that we're facing in society today are coming to light. And then, of course, tomorrow's Father's Day. And these kind of days were always great days for families to get together and go to the ballpark. And I just think we've got a big hole in our culture right now without things like professional sports. And as you look forward, I mean, I'm gonna ask this a different way, but I mean, what do you think our culture will be like if we can't get back to what celebrating days like today and tomorrow and yesterday around a baseball game? What do you think our culture is going to be like?
I do worry about that, Peter. I think baseball, I think a lot of sports in general, but baseball, it is a place where people from all different backgrounds come together to enjoy, in our case, a day or a night out with your family while watching a baseball game. You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican or no matter what race you're from, you enjoy that family experience and that camaraderie that comes with being at a live event. And yeah, when you don't have that, it just further disconnects us, I think, from each other. Like you said, I mean, hopefully we're able to do that again, because I do think sports does have a way. It's had a way of healing in our country. Now you think about after 9/11 and that famous baseball game in New York, you know, the Mets and the Yankees and President Bush throwing out the first pitch and the feeling that the entire country got. Mm-hmm. Not because of baseball, but around baseball. And, you know, we've played through world wars. We've played through depressions. We've played through unrest in the past. And baseball's had a way of bringing people together. And hopefully we can do that. And you're right, it's part of the fabric. It's part of who we are. And when it's not there, you know, there's definitely a hole in what people cannot experience.
You know, it always shocks me, I think, positively, that when I would go to the ballpark or even to a Bills game or a hockey game, there's no Democrats or Republicans there. It's all fans, and everybody's on the same team in the stadium, even if you're rooting for the other team, because it's always friendly, and this is such an important part of our life here, and I'm really hoping that somehow through science and through deliberation and through a better understanding of how we can stay well, that we can figure out a way to get back to those kinds of days, because I think we're a much better community because of those things. And we have another caller on the line here, Mike. This is Jay from Buffalo. Jay, how can we help you?
Hi. Good morning. Peter just alluded to a thought I had when you said you could have 2,400 in the stadium because of social distancing. And it occurred to me that a lot of families would come down who may come down, who live together and don't need social distancing. And is there like a family package or a way of encouraging families to come down? It would increase your fan base, the amount of people would come in, and the social distancing for families would be different than for strangers. And just a comment, that's how I was looking at this.
It's an interesting thought. Have you thought about that, Mike?
We have, and you know, the Bisons, I think, more than our friends at the Bills and the Sears, we're more of a family event you know, with a baseball game than the other two sports. And so families have always been a big part of us. And yes, we have thought about that. And but still, if you bring a family of five in that now can sit next to each other, the guidelines still at this point say you still need to be 6 feet apart. The person not living with them then needs to be 6 feet apart. So while that family of five can sit together, basically they're taking up more seating inventory, and so your overall capacity really doesn't change that much. It might a little bit, give or take, you know, but it's still going to be, I think, in the 2400. Maybe it goes up to 2700 or 2800, but certainly not anything close to what we can do now.
Mike, I'm sure you're aware that in Europe, some of the countries in Europe, it's not 6 feet. It's 1 meter or a meter and a half, which is 3 or 4 feet. And it's interesting that we've adopted the standards we have. Do you know if in Europe there in some of the states or countries that didn't really shut down like we did here, are they back to playing sports live?
Yeah, many of them are in Europe. Soccer teams now. There's many sports that are playing with empty stadiums. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball is just trying to do. They're trying to get started to play at empty stadiums. And the Korean Baseball League is really the only professional baseball that gets going on now, and you can watch the games on ESPN, I think, at about 2 in the morning, and they just don't have anybody in the seats, they're able to play the game. But, yeah, I think, you know, if those restrictions go from 6 feet to 3 feet, then that's going to, you know, have to change our equation and our capacity. And those are some of the leagues we're trying to learn from, just as the world is learning from the countries that were struck with the virus before it came to the States, and we're learning how they got through it and what they're doing to come out of it. We're going to do the same with the sporting events that are happening, you know, across the ocean.
You know, Mike, I want to have you back on when we hopefully have a different world so that we can be talking about baseball and the more about how you operate your team, because it's a very interesting business that John Dandies has shared with us here several times on the air. But I'd love to hear your perspective. I'm going to invite you back so that hopefully we can talk about a team that's playing at the ballpark soon, I hope, because I think it's as I mentioned before, I think it's a real loss to our culture. In our last couple minutes here, Mike, what message would you like to leave with our listeners in terms of the future of baseball?
Well, I just hope that, I mean, from our standpoint, the very first thing that has to happen is and you've read a lot about it maybe, Peter, that the Major League Baseball Players Association and the owners have not come to an agreement restart the season. That restarting Major League Baseball has to happen. There is no minor leagues without major leagues. And so that's the first thing. And we have to figure out how to do it safely, whether it's for players or fans, the people that work at the ballpark. But I can tell you that we miss it. It's what we do. It's what we spent all offseason doing every year, is planning for that next year. And this virus hit at the worst possible time for baseball, because it was right before our season was going to start. And we miss it. We miss it dearly. I've talked to a lot of our season ticket holders that feel the same way and echo the thoughts that you had mentioned about a hole in their lives. And we're going to remain optimistic, remain hopeful, optimistic. We're going to learn. We're going to learn how we might be able to improve things so that when we can safely gather again, there will be baseball there for everybody.
Mike Butchkowski, president of Rich Baseball Operations and Buffalo Bisons general manager, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your thoughts, and hopefully that optimistic outlook will be with us, and we'll be back in the ballpark soon. I'd like to thank all our listeners for being with us. I'd like to wish all the fathers a happy Father's Day. Remember, it's American Eagle Day, and hopefully we'll be celebrating Juneteenth as a national holiday in the future. My best wishes to all of you. We'll be back again next week at the same time. Remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.